Well, good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melissa C., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from New York. Today is Tuesday, July 9th, 2024, and today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 30, the fourth paragraph. We are like men who have lost their legs, through one paragraph ending with, but it hasn't done so yet. And we'll be commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers for the 12 steps, it's Rivka K. For the 12 traditions, Patrick O. Readers of the text will be Colleen M. and Danny P. will read 164. Our newcomer greeter is Chris W. And the host of our second hour is Christine G. Reference numbers for yesterday, Monday, July 8th, the 7 a.m. meeting was 21,552. That's 21552. And for the 10 a.m. meeting, 21,553. That's 21553. Okay, the OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I'm going to now ask Rivka K. to read those 12 steps. Good morning, Rivka.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. Thank you for your service. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Rivka, for your service. I'll now ask Patrick O., to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, everybody. Patrick, compulsive eater. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your service. Okay, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. And today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 30. We're in the fourth paragraph. We are like men who have lost their legs through one paragraph ending with, but it hasn't done so yet. And comments will be on that one paragraph only. And I will now ask Colleen M. to begin reading for us. Good morning, Colleen.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Thank you for your service. This is Colleen M. from Maryland, recovered compulsive overeater. We are like men who have lost their legs. They will never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there have been brief recovery, followed always by still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it has not done so yet. So, wow, this is just such a powerful couple pages. Well, this whole book is powerful, but I think the only way for me to discuss this is just talk about my own experience with coming to believe that I'm fully conceding to my innermost self that I was a true food addict, a compulsive overeater. And, you know, that's taken me a couple decades, unfortunately, to come to this conclusion. The next paragraph talks about, you know, if we're real alcoholics, then we're probably not going to believe that we're in this class. And I, you know, I just didn't understand the seriousness of this disease. I started in OA 25 years ago and got myself a food plan and lost the 40 pounds I had to lose and went about my merry way, you know, dabbled in it here and there. As you all probably can guess, you know, I did not get recovered. I did not understand the complexity of this disease. The allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And I you know, gained that and lots of other weight back many, many times over. You know, coming back in here, I guess it's been about 9 years ago, after a 10-year relapse and you know, getting, being of 120 pounds overweight, you know, which I always told myself, you know, as long as I'm under a size 14, you know, I had all these rules about, you know, whether I was one of you guys or not. I always knew there was something different about my eating, but I certainly never was willing to accept or believe that, you know, I was to a point where I had to, you know, give up food in general and certain foods that I absolutely love. And, it, you know, it just took trial. It took failure. It took coming back and relearning. And there's just a light switch went off in my brain at some point. And I finally, you know, got it. The denial was broken. You know, I really had to, you know, I had many sponsors. Oh, you're not that bad. You don't have to do that. You don't have to do this. And it really just took me listening, coming to a lot of meetings, hearing a lot of other voices to compare myself in. I was thinking, I think if a doctor said to me, look, if I cut off both your legs, you could eat anything you want and remain thin and not have to worry about food, I would seriously have to consider that. So that's how insane I am. And but you know, today I know that cutting off my legs is not going to change anything, because if I put certain substances in my body that I have an allergy to, then I have proven to myself over and over and over again that the reaction, what the reaction is going to be. You know, we cannot make, thank you, I can't become a normal eater once I cross over that line of becoming a compulsive overeater. And thank God today I know that. Thanks for letting me share. I'll pass.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much, Colleen M., for getting us started. All right, so before I begin to take names, I know it's a pretty powerful paragraph. I'm going to remind you that our meeting has many participants, and in an effort to hear from a variety of voices, we ask our, you know, fellows to just share no more than every third day. So please, if you shared yesterday or Friday of last week on any of our Vision for You meetings, hold back so that others may share. Who would like to share?
Renee.
Christina G. Katie G.
Marie.
Katie G. from Boston.
Okay, wait.
Marie L. G.
I heard Therese.
Katie.
Bonnie B.
Bonnie.
Marie L. G.
Ken W. H.
Dolores T.
Ken W. H.
Nancy C.
Hold on. There was somebody. I got you. Okay, Nancy C. There was somebody right after Ken W. H. I missed.
Karen F.
Tony B.
Karen.
Dolores P.
Dolores. Oh, my goodness. Okay, wait. Hold on. All right, I'm going to stop for a second. Let me just say the names that I have and hold back everybody. I heard Renee, did not get your last initial. Heard Therese, I did not get your last initial. Heard Katie G, heard Bonnie B, Marie Ellen, again, I lost the last initial. Ken W. H., Karen, I'm not sure if it was F or S, Nancy C., Dolores P. Was there anybody who already said their name, but I didn't? Oh, Tony B. I know it was Tony B. I heard. Anybody else?
Christina J.
Christina J. All right. I'm going to stop here for now. And if I missed you, we will circle around. So please, when I call your name, you could tell me the initial of your last name since I didn't get it, and your state, which would be really helpful when people want to find you on the membership list. So I'm going to start with Renee and then go to Therese. And if I got Therese or Teresa, I'm not sure. So, Renee, you can go first.
Good morning. This is Renee H. from Pennsylvania, and I am still a recovering compulsive overeater. I have stuck around program solidly for 4 years, but I have been in relapse for the last 2 years, though have been abstinent the last 2 or 3 months. What a wonderful paragraph, and it just makes me smile thinking about my unconscious denial in a way. I knew when I first started program that, you know, I had a disease. And I, did my initial recovery, my initial steps through the, an OA literature and the OA 12 and 12, which is beautiful literature. But coming to you all and starting with a big book study, you know, wow, things are being revealed a lot more. And listening to you all every morning has just been so helpful. And I had a realization, and just this paragraph really made me think of it. It just made me laugh when I thought of it. You know, one of my big binge foods was gummy bears. And what's so funny about it, is I can remember the very first moment in fourth grade that went into my mouth. I remembered like the explosion in my mind, like this is the most amazing thing I've ever had. And I bet you that's not a normal thought for someone who isn't a compulsive overeater. And it's for another food as well, something that you can dip your food into, where the food that I would eat a lot of, but when I could dip my food into it, it changed everything. And I can remember the first time I ate that too, also in fourth grade, an explosion in my mind. And that is a compulsive eater. That is something that I can't imagine is going to go away if that moment has been embedded in my head, since the fourth grade, 40 plus years. So anyways, thank you for letting me share. Thank you all for existing and helping me get back working towards my solid recovery. And thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Thanks so much for sharing. Okay, next up is Therese, and I believe it's Therese, and then Katie G. Did I mess that up? Was there a Therese or a Teresa? Maybe I imagined it. Okay, I'm going to move on. I'm going to go to Katie G and then Bonnie B.
Good morning, Melissa. Oh, excuse me. Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, everyone. I'm Katie G. I'm a recovered compulsive eater in Boston. You know, I really struggled with this metaphor of losing my legs. I don't know why. I just didn't get it. And a couple years ago, I was like, whoa, they're never going to go back. So I'm sitting there and I have no legs. You know, I thought that I could come into the rooms 20 years ago and round my life out with a little bit of OA, but that doesn't work for me. I'm a low bottom compulsive eater. I am an anorexic. I am a hardcore exercise bulimic. If you give it to me, I'm going to abuse it. I am 45 and I need a total knee replacement. I have done damage to my body that has convinced me that I'm completely without my legs. And what does that mean for me today? It means I don't fit my program into my life. I fit my life into my program. And people say to me, well, how do you do it with a family? And look, I'm not saying I'm doing it perfectly. You know, I struggle. I just made an amend to my daughter. Like, please don't hear that. But like, I know that this program, this recovery, this remedy has to be sought after. And I know I need to do it daily. Yes, it was a lot easier when I didn't have little humans. But I mean, this is pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And I want to say something too, like my disease was not one of denial. Denial is contradiction, saying it's not true. The previous paragraph tells me that I'm in delusion. Delusion is a false psychotic belief. It's this belief that I'm obsessing about, you know, one thing over and over again. And then I get this thought, you know what? Alcohol is going to fix it. Gum is going to fix it. Diet soda is going to fix it. The scale is going to fix it. And I have no connection to God. And so all I know to do is to go to this false God that I have and to get am completely obliterated, right? I borrow from my future so that I can be comfortable in the present moment, you know, and I still haven't grown back new legs. Yeah, I say I'm recovered, but I am only recovered contingent on the maintenance, which means I need to continue to grow, to give life to the maintenance of my spiritual condition. I must continue to remember that I do have to do step 10 spot check inventory. I do have to pray and meditate. I do have to keep this program first. Maybe it's human dependent, maybe not, but this book tells me what my instructions are each and every day. And I'll tell you what, these instructions bring me to God, and God gives me this comfort, this ease and comfort that lasts always. And with that, I pass.
Boy, what perfect timing. Thanks, Katie G. Next up is Bonnie B., followed by Marie Ellen. Good morning, Bonnie.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, everyone. Oh, my goodness, already amazing, beautiful. Bonnie B., recovered by the grace of God today. The next 24 hours. You know, the thing that I think is so cool about this chapter along with the previous chapters is it appears as though the game plan is to get me to come to my own conclusion that this is my DNA. Katie just did a beautiful job describing the word delusion. I also have that as part of my reference. It's a belief or an impression that is firmly maintained despite being contradicted by what is generally accepted as reality or rational argument. You know, it says neither does there be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of my kind, like other men. You know, a couple paragraphs down talks about here some of the methods we've tried. I've put in my book everything I've tried, but I know, and I've heard it said on this phone line many times, I had to try them all. I had to try every single one of them before I would ever fully conceive, you know what, I've lost my legs and I'm not going back. And there's nothing that other people do who don't have my DNA that's going to work for me. Every imaginable remedy, I put diets next to that. Brief recovery, yeah, that's the reason I kept trying these new things, because it appeared as though it maybe sort of worked, to the tune of thousands and thousands of dollars and behaviors that are just like, oh my word, the amends I had to make for pilfering money here and there to my husband so I could do these crazy schemes, because it appeared as though maybe it sort of worked. And it might work for someone that doesn't have my DNA, but I had to come to the conclusion it doesn't work for me because I do have a different DNA. On page 427, it says, if you're an apple, you can be the best apple you can be, but you can never be an orange. I have a different DNA. As much as I'd love to have my husband's beautiful blue eyes, I have brown eyes. The moment I accept it, surrender, lean in, and then grab on to the answer, which is connecting to my God and asking him to do for me what nothing else and no one else could ever do for me, which is to relieve me of my thinking, because that's my issue. It's not an eating issue for me. It's my thinking. When I'm restless, irritable, discontent, when I lose my peace, it's because I've disconnected from God. I've made an idol out of something that's eye level. That's my experience. And food is always a step up. And did it get worse? Absolutely, it got worse. I mean, this is just the nature of the disease. But there is a solution. And I am so grateful to be in these rooms, and I am so grateful for each and every one of you. With that, I'll pass, and thanks again. Blessings all.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Bonnie B. And next up is Marie Ellen. I think it's Marie Ellen K. You can correct me.
G.
Then.
G.
Oh, G.
It's Marie Ellen G. Yeah. Hi,
Marie Ellen G.
Good morning. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then Ken W.H. Good morning, Marie Ellen.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. This is Marie Ellen G. from New York, a recovered compulsive overeater. I want to thank you, Colleen, for sharing, and you, Melissa, for moderating. When I heard this reading, the thing that mostly struck out was about the treatment. I think it said something about, you know, science hasn't found a way. And the thing that struck me is that I left everything through my own thinking, everything. And so I had a relationship with God. I had a spiritual awakening many years ago, and it was powerful. But when it came to the food, I fleshed it through my own head and said, God would never make all these delicious things and not allow me to have them. No, that's not freedom. OA can't be right about that. And so even though I went many years ago in the rooms, I was always waiting for the day when I could continue eating these delicious foods, because how could God do that? It's not fair. Self-pity was a massive issue with me and my own thinking, like, who am I? And for some reason, in his great mercy, I felt such a block between him, even though I was doing everything I always did. I cried out that I couldn't take that anymore, and he answered me. And it was to get back into this program. And my head would start thinking, and I would tell my head, be quiet. Listen to what your sponsor says and just do it for once. Just do what they say. And the compulsion lifted, and my life, I did not realize, yes, he is asking us to put that substance down. And no, I can't explain why I am made the way I am made. But I know that it was all for good, because my relationship with God is explosively beautiful. The people in my life in this program have become such meaningful people in my life who encourage me to walk this walk every day. This vision meeting is perfect. And I used to have, like many of you I'm sure can understand, a light bulb that would go off. And they talk about the leg being cut off. Well, you know what? There are other things that are even, I think, even more horrible. The shame I felt when the light bulb went off, the food was completely my master. And I had to bow down to it. I had to get up in the night to get to eat stuff I didn't even want to eat. Well, by putting it down, by listening and doing, you know, be quiet, Maria Ellen. I tell myself now, even if sometimes it fleetingly comes through, I know it's going to interrupt this beautiful relationship with God and this fellowship for me. And no, I'm not willing for that. I'm willing to put the food down. Thank you so much. Hi, Pat.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much, Marie Ellen G. Next up is Ken W.H., and then followed by Karen. I'm not sure Karen what, but good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Melissa. Ken W.H., recovered compulsive eater from North Carolina. I'm just full of gratitude today. So grateful to have 4 years today and of abstinence as a result of coming to these meetings and getting a whole lot of support from a whole lot of people, especially the person who has lived with me for so long in and out of recovery. It says on page 60 that God, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, my alcoholism. Science, a pill produced or some kind of elixir produced by science would be human made. And if in fact I turned to that and they did find something to take away the allergy and compulsion, then that would be my God. That would be my higher power. And I don't believe that that's an oxymoron. Science is not God to me and can never be. And they can never find a way out of this. Even if, you know, I always say to myself, even if they came up with the pill, I don't want to take it. Because that pill cannot produce a power greater than myself in me. It cannot get a living God into me, a living power into me. It doesn't. I don't believe it's possible. And I think that's a false. And frankly, I'm not even sure that scientists are even spending any time looking for it because they know better. So I'm just grateful that I don't feel a need to get fixed, so to speak, by just some strange power of science. No, it's God. It's God who has become a part of my life, and it's the core and center and of my recovery. And I'm so grateful for it. Thank you, Pass.
thank you so much, Ken W.H., for sharing. And congratulations on your anniversary and your abstinence. Next up is Karen. I'm not sure your last initial, followed by Nancy C. Is there a Karen there? Did I? Maybe I'm hearing things. I hear someone unmuted. I'm not sure if that's a Karen or, and I'm just not hearing you. Okay, I'm going to move on to Nancy C then, and then Dolores P. Nancy, are you available?
Hey. Yeah, I am. Hey, okay. Melissa. Nancy C. Good morning, everyone. Nancy C. Gratefully recovered this morning in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And boy, what a powerful meeting this morning. They have been, God, all year. Every one of these meetings is very powerful. But the shares have been really very helpful to me in reminding me that I am a distinct entity. You know, once you say you're in the class that you've lost your legs, you're in a distinct entity. And I think throughout the book, it is made clear that I am in that class, that I am not like normal people. But, you know, who defines normal? I define normal. And, boy, I lie to myself. I make normal up every day. Oh, if I only look like that, or if I only look like that, or if I only ate like that, this next time it's going to work because it worked for somebody else. I make my own rules and then break them because I am a distinct entity and I can't make my rules. I have to go outside of myself to a power greater than myself to be able to restore me to any type of sanity. The way that this book is laid out and talks about how we are unique and we're different, but we're all together. You know, yesterday we talked about living the program, not working the program. And I think for me, that's very important because this has become a way of living. When God finally got to me to put down the food and replace it with Him and replace it with this fellowship, my life changed drastically and I wouldn't turn it in for anything. But it's something that I had to realize that I couldn't control myself. The distinct entity of not having legs, you know, when Colleen said at the beginning that, you know, I had to think seriously, if I could eat what I wanted, if I didn't have legs, I think I would take that proposition. I was like, that's ridiculous. And then I had to say, nope, I would think the same thing and really have to seriously consider it too. So I'm glad I'm with people who think like me, who know that there is a solution, that I don't have to make that decision that I'll sit there and eat without legs. I'd rather not have the legs and strap on this tool of recovery that this program gives me, that you guys have given me, and live happy, joyous, and free. But it's only by showing up, suiting up, and being willing to put the food down, pick up your hands, and pick up God's love that gets me to be that distinct entity that I'm really proud to be today. So with that, I'll turn it over and just really grateful that you guys are here every morning for me. Thanks, Melissa.
Well, thank you, Nancy. Thanks so much for your share. Okay, next up is Dolores P., and then that'll be followed by Tony B. Good morning, Dolores. Not have gotten another name wrong. I mean, I could have. I really thought I heard Dolores P. Is Dolores P. there? But I could have just been making up names randomly. Give it a minute. Tony B., are you available?
Hi, yes, this is Tony B. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Scotland. And goodness, this is a wonderful paragraph. You know, there is no treatment. There's no kind of treatment, not the steps, not anything that can change me into a non-compulsive overeater. thank goodness there is a program, there is a treatment that can change other aspects of me, the steps. But this part, this is never going to change. I have this disease. I am a compulsive overeater, and this is a fact, and I will never be like other people. It's really important for me every morning when I wake up to say on my knees to God as I understand him, God, I am a real compulsive overeater, and I need your help today. So it says we've tried every imaginable remedy, and I would say certainly as a collective, yes. Personally, I haven't tried every imaginable remedy, but I have tried diets, willpower, over-exercise, health farms, another fellowship, thought that might do it, psychotherapy, OA Light, and yes, I got brief recovery. I've lost 40 pounds several times over. I've strong willpower, and I could tell myself I'm going to do this, but following, always worse. So this disease is progressive. It is in the car park doing push-ups, and I'm glad to say that I realize that as I go more into my recovery, I need more of this treatment because of that reason. It wouldn't necessarily be worse straight away. I'd think I'm trying this way. Okay, I'm going to have three meals a day, but I can eat anything, and I'm not going to worry about volume. And it would start off quite well. I'd be able to be quite moderate. I'd been quite frightened by the last relapse, and then the volumes would grow and grow, and the snacking would return, and the desperation would return, and I'd be driven back into the rooms again and again. But finally, and really thank God for Vision for You, this particular approach to recovery and fellows' clarity that I heard, sunk in. The food has to be down. And I have to be very clear what that means, because if I have this, then the only relief is entire abstinence. And yes, God can relieve me. I can recover on a daily basis as long as I'm doing certain things. I'm not ever going to be cured, though. Just like the man's not going to grow his legs back, I'm never going to be cured. But I am so grateful to be on this path with all of you. And with that, I'll share the time.
Path. Thank you. Thanks, Tony B. Okay. Next up is Christina, and then I'm going to circle back around because maybe there was problems with star one for the other people. So, good morning, Christina. Christina J.
Hi, Melissa. Hi, Melissa. Hi, everyone. Christina J. in North Carolina. I didn't hear Ruth M., who's one of our beloved members who has shared some powerful, powerful podcasts. I didn't really hear her message until about a year ago. She has one called More About Alcoholism, where she talks about the disease lives in the unconscious and it never leaves. And the only thing that can block that disease from coming up, seeping up, creeping up, rising up like champagne bubbles, little by little, is God or your higher power, whatever you want to call it. And so it took me a while to really connect with this God. I'd have great connections, and I'd have little spiritual awakenings, and I was on a roll, but then I'd stop working the thing that kept me close to God. I have to be hit over the head every day with a soft mallet, sometimes a harder mallet, reading things over and over and over. I listened to one Swami who says, you have to chant every day, you have to remember, you have to read, you have to keep yourself steeped in what keeps you close to God, because I'm human, and I have a certain way of going about life and being that has been formulated since I was a little girl, and that is reaching for the food for everything that's uncomfortable. Reaching for the food, that's been my go-to. I have always had this disease. I am not in denial about it. For a long time I didn't know what it was. I tried fen-phen. I just wanted to get the sugar out of my system, because it seemed like when I had the sugar out of my system, I could be sane, but there was things in
We lost you, Christina. Christina, press star one to unmute.
I don't know what that was, Melissa. Can you hear me now?
I got you now. Yep, you can continue.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, I just wanted that sugar out of my system, and I figured that brain chemistry, dopamine, serotonin, whatever. I even took a trip, a long plane trip, to see a doctor who was going to prescribe tryptophan for me that would keep my brain sane. So, yeah, nothing. Science. I thought when I started taking FenFan that science had accomplished it. Man, I could push the plate back. But I have had nothing but relapses. And until I just kept crawling to God, and I have just wonderful ways to crawl to God now because I am a very anxious person. I get anxious about a lot of stuff. This is from childhood trauma and drama and all that stuff. It's in my blood. It's in my bones, and I'm working on it. But the only way I can relieve it is to crawl to God. You know, when my second husband died of cancer, I was on Optifast. I just started it, and I felt so deprived of that love and that beauty of that man, and I just couldn't deprive myself anymore with another damn diet. And I lost the ability to diet. I could never diet again after that. And to me, that's like losing my legs. I could never diet again. The thing that was going to get me skinny and make me acceptable and have you all love me, I couldn't do it anymore. And then there started a series of trying everything again. Didn't know about OA yet. I mean, I kind of did. I'll finish up. But I didn't really dive in like I needed to. And today I dive in like I need to because it keeps me alive. That's the bottom line. It keeps me alive. Thank you for letting me share, Akash.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Christina J. Okay, so I believe that there's been some problems with Star One. So I'm just going to offer again first the people who names I took down and thought maybe they didn't put their names. There was a Therese or a Teresa. There was a Karen, and then there was a Dolores P. Are any of, is Teresa available to share? Okay, and now I'll go to Karen. Is Karen or Dolores P? All right, well, okay, so now I will take a list of new names and, you know, to remind you where we've read before we can continue on. We read page 30, the fourth paragraph. We're like men who have lost their legs through one paragraph ending with, but it hasn't done so yet. And I'll take
Janice P.M.
Janice
P.M.
Anne-Marie.
Erin
K. Lisa
B.
Anne-Marie.
Claire East, UK.
Amy G.
Okay. Claire E. from UK.
Victoria L.
Okay, wait. Claire.
Did you get Amy G?
There was Lisa G, I believe, and Amy G.
Erin K. from Michigan.
Oh, and then Erin K. I don't know that I'm going to get to everybody. I'm going to write your names and we'll see because people might not be able to press to unmute. So I got Janice PM, Anne-Marie M, Clary, Lisa G, I believe, or Lisa B. I couldn't hear all the way. Amy G, Victoria L, and Erin K. So let's jump on in. Janice PM, you're up.
And thank you so much, Melissa C., for taking. Nice to hear you. My name is Janice P.M. I live in Massachusetts, and I'm a recovered, grateful, compulsive overeater. I love this paragraph. First of all, I was taught that I do have a physical problem, okay? I have an allergy of the body. Now, we know that. We know that. But I also know that I have an obsession of the mind, and the obsession of the mind means I have a defect in my mind. And because my thinking was always, despite everything, I'll do it my way. But I have a physical problem, but I have a spiritual problem. See, I never knew that. I thought, well, I have a God in my life. I'm okay with that. But you see, when we lose our leg or I lose a tooth, the doctors can't help me. They cannot grow a new one because they just don't have the ability. You know, if my husband was a dentist and, you know, if he had to extract a tooth and I'd say, can you grow a new one? No, it's beyond human aid. And I was always looking and searching for that human aid, whether it was like we just heard, fenfen. Yeah, I use that. But that's physical. And it gives me another physical problem, my heart. So you see, nothing worked for me, despite because I was defiant. I was rebellious. You know, I always disagreed. I was going to be so unique. I was going to find it because I wanted to, my experience, total experience, was always trying and testing. That's all I did was test because I was self-deceiving myself, from lying to myself about my, you know, about that I'm going to try to find a way. And that's what I'm going to try to do. Until I had to surrender to treat, to have my spiritual malady treated. That's the whole foundation. That was my problem, that I had untreated compulsive eating. And until I did find the 12 steps and surrender and be convinced and decided and, you know, really... excuse me, was not in conflict with authority, my sponsors, you know, that I did find a treatment for only 24 hours, and it wasn't from anybody on this earth or any pill, because I did it all. I tried not to be a compulsive overeater, so yeah, I tested.
Fine.
Thank you, hon. Tested. So I know today that the daily reprieve of what I'm doing is just for one day, and I'm having my spiritual malady treated, and then everything else will fall in line. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice. Okay, next up is Anne Marie, followed by Claire E. Good morning, Anne Marie.
Good morning. Melissa, thank you. Difficult job that you have. Appreciate you. My name is Anne Marie M. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in South Carolina, recovered through God's grace and by working the steps through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, someone earlier mentioned about, you know, reading all the AA literature, I mean, the OA literature, and then, you know, coming to this meeting and finding the big book. And similar to me, once I got into learning about the big book, I knew about the big book, but I never got into the depths and realized that this is a way of living. This book teaches me how to live. So putting that aside, what jumped out at me was the sentence on the top of page 31. In some instances, there had been some relief, some brief recovery, followed always by still worse relapse. That was my experience. I would get, you know, maybe it was more of a reprieve, a week, a month, a few months of being abstinent. And then I would, you know, in page 85, it says, we are neither cocky nor afraid. Well, yeah, I got cocky and thought, you know, I can handle this. I can just have one now. You know, it's been a week that I haven't had anything, and surely I could probably have just a little bit. And it got worse and worse. I had been recovered, and I think now that I'm, you know, somebody had mentioned something and it triggered my thought that it was probably ego that I, or pride that I hadn't let go of. And I started thinking, you know, I really don't need to do 10 steps on this. I can handle it on my own. That's usually, you know, and I've heard people say, hey, you know, between me and God, you know, I could handle this. So I stopped doing that. I felt like I was recovered now. I had been recovered, and who knows, I can handle this. I can handle little problems, little difficulties in my life. Or I don't really need to call my sponsor, you know, my time with God in the morning had slipped away. I had sponsees that needed me, you know, at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, I pushed God aside my God time, and before you know it, I wasn't into, you know, praying to God. So it just got worse and worse, and I was 5 years in a horrible relapse. So that's what this paragraph brought out for me, and I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Anne-Marie M. Next up is Claire E., and I'm not sure, we probably will be able to get to Lisa G. as well. Good morning, Claire.
Morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for your service and for everybody. It's been a great meeting. Really enjoyed listening to it. And I think, like a lot of people have shared, I've never really gelled with this analogy of the men that lost legs. It's kind of something I've skimmed read over. But during the meeting, I've really been sitting there and thinking about that. You know, like, what is it like to lose your legs? You know, you're probably pretty devastated to start off with. And then you have to sort of readapt to life and start planning your life as a person who has no legs. And I was thinking, you know, that probably includes, you know, when you go somewhere, you check out whether they've got disabled access. You know, you check out, you probably get a bit more tired. You plan to put in pauses and breaks, and you know that you can't quite go at the same pace as you used to. And, you know, it was really kind of a good analogy for me to sit with, is because I've had to really learn to do that in recovery. I can't just pitch up somewhere gung-ho and glib and expect to find the foods that I can eat, and I'm on holiday at the moment, actually, and you know, it takes a certain bit of planning and for my distinct entityness, you know, for the fact that I have no legs, you know, to make sure that there's safe food. I have to put in times that I can do my meetings, my calls. I haven't been doing that great the last few days, to be honest, but today I have, and it's a quite a difference in my you know, outlook is amazing already, and I know that because this stuff works, you know. So, you know, it's like once I've accepted that I have blue eyes or no legs, you know, then I have to plan my life accordingly. And for me, obviously, that's as a compulsive eater, the real deal, you know, one who has had on many occasions brief recovery followed by still work relapse. And you know, that's a line as well. I don't go back in at the level that I think I'm going to go in. I think I'm going to control and enjoy my eating when I'm about to relapse. And the truth is, I go straight back to the really bad stuff. And you know, so therefore, I have to absolutely put the footwork in to be able to live my life in a normal fashion, even though I'm not a normal person. And I think there's another speaker who says, and I love this, there is no amount of spiritual recovery I have, and like someone else has shared, there's no amount of information in this book that is going to take away my physical allergy and my abnormal reaction to food. But, you know, that is not on offer here. What is on offer is a solution to what I suffer from, which is a spiritual illness, which means I don't need to use the food. And I'll pass with that. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much, Claire M. And so we're just going to have time for Lisa. And then, you know, I apologize to Amy, Victoria, and Erin. Hopefully you'll stay for the second part. Lisa? Is it Lisa G or Lisa B? Couldn't hear.
This is Lisa B from Michigan, compulsive overeater, recovered today.
Good morning.
Can I be heard?
You sure can. Go right ahead, Lisa.
Awesome. Thank you for your service. I could so relate to this. I know in the beginning, and sometimes still, I have a fair amount of denial that I don't fit in, that I can't relate because I heard others share about extreme experiences, and that was not my experience. So I rationalized and justified that I didn't belong. But I heard in another program, relate, don't compare. And they mean relate to the feelings that they share. And that's been working for me. I need my fellows so, so much because a lot of times my God speaks to me through my fellows. And that's been so helpful with being on the meeting. Thank God for the sponsor that I have today who has been very supportive and encouraging, but at the same time, extremely firm about, you know, this is what you need to do, or strong suggestions, let's put it that way. I do have an allergy of the body and obsession of the mind, and I can't do it without y'all, and I can't do it without my God, and the food will separate me from both. So I will keep coming back. Thank you so much for letting me share. I'll pass.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for sharing. That was our last share. And thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for today, July 9th, is 21,555. That's 21555. And we'll now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And will Danny P. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for your service, for your wonderful service. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.